It was a very warm afternoon, and Girlie was sitting by the playroom window watching the goldfish idly swimming about in her little aquarium. She was feeling very sigh, as she called it. That is, not very happy, for her brothers were all away from home and she had no one to talk to. Even Boy, her youngest brother, was staying with some friends at Broadstairs, and she thought it very hard that she should have to wait at home for another week before joining him there. And her aunt, with whom she was staying, had received a letter from him that morning and had brought it up to Girlie to read. "But it will only make me more sorry than ever that I'm not there," thought poor Girlie. And she had the letter in her hand and was trying to decide whether she should read it or not, when she caught sight of a few words at the bottom of the first page, which was half drawn out of the envelope. "I have found a goo," was written in Boy's big sprawling handwriting. "Whatever is a goo?" thought Girlie, and instead of reading the rest of the letter as most people would have done, she shut her eyes and tried to think whether she had ever heard of or seen such a thing. She was trying hard to remember whether there was such a creature mentioned in her natural history book, and had just come to the conclusion that she had never read of one, when she heard a little cough from the other end of the room. And, opening her eyes, oh, she saw Dompsy Diesel, her favorite doll, struggling up from the very uncomfortable position in which she had been lying, with her head in a domino box and her feet on Noah's Ark. Girlie stared with amazement, and the more so when Dompsy Diesel, having succeeded in getting onto her feet, walked awkwardly up to where she was sitting and holding out a stiff, sawdust-stuffed hand, said in a squeaky little voice,
"So you want to know what a goo is, do you?"
"Oh, you dear old thing," cried Girlie, jumping up excitedly and catching Dumpsy Diesel up in her arms. "I always knew that you could talk if only you would. And now at last you're going to do so, just as dolls always do in fairy tale books.
Of course, all dolls can talk if they like," said Dumpsy Diesel. "Only they never do so, except when they wish. But about the goo, do you really want to know what it is?"
"Yes, I do," said Girlie, "because I don't remember ever having heard of such a thing."
"Well, I don't quite know what it is myself," said Dumpsy Diesel, "but I can take you to the land of Why if you like, where all the questions and answers come from, and then you can find out for yourself, you know."
"Oh, that would be splendid," exclaimed Girlie. "Is it a very long way off, though?"
"Yes, it is rather a long way," admitted Dumpsy Diesel, "but it would not take us long to go there by the way in which we should go."
"How is that?" asked Girlie. "By train?"
"Oh, dear, no," cried Dumpsy Diesel, "by a much quicker way than that. You just have to take hold of one of my hands and, shutting your eyes very tightly, count up to 100 aloud, and then when you open them again, you will find yourself there."
"What a funny way to travel," said Girlie. "I am sure that, though, I should like it very much indeed. Can we go now, this very minute?"
"Yes," said Dumpsy Diesel, "but before we start, you must promise me that you will be very kind to the Wally Pug, for he is a kind of relation of mine."
"The Wally Pug? Good gracious, whoever is he?" exclaimed Girlie.
"You will see when you get to Why,"
said Dumpsy Diesel mysteriously.
"Now then, are you ready? Remember though, you must be sure and not let go of my hands till you have counted up to 100, or you will lose me." All right, promised Carly, taking hold of Dumpsy Diesel's hand and screwing up her eyes very tightly. One, two. She was sorely tempted to open her eyes, however, when she felt herself being carried off her feet. Still, she felt very comfortable, and it seemed to her that she was floating rapidly through the air.
Oh dear, somebody is taking hold of my other hand now, cried Girly. I really must look. And opening her eyes, she found herself in a country lane. And a benevolent-looking old little gentleman, dressed in knee breeches and wearing a huge broad-brimmed hat, was holding her wrist with one hand, while in the other, he held a toy watch. Dumpsy Diesel was floating rapidly away in the distance, frantically waving her arms and screaming out in an agonized voice,
I told you not to open your eyes until you had got to 100!
While Girly watched her disappear over the hedge, and then turned in dismay to the little old gentleman, who was still holding her hand and beaming upon her with a reassuring smile. Your friend was taking you through the air rather too quickly to be good for your health, so I thought that I had better stop you, he said.
Well, then I think it was very rude of you, said Girly, who felt greatly alarmed at having lost Dumpsy Diesel. I don't know, I'm sure. However, I'm going to get home again now, she continued, feeling half inclined to cry.
Excuse me, you should never say, I don't know, said the old gentleman. It is a very bad plan. If you really do not know anything, you should always pretend that you do. I invariably do so, and I ought to know, for I am the Wally Pug's doctor-in-law.
Oh, who is the Wally Pug, please? Asked Girly curiously.
And I'm afraid I don't know what a doctor-in-law is either.
One question at a time, my child, said the old gentleman. Who the Wally Pug is, you will soon find out for yourself. And a doctor-in-law is something between a father-in-law and a stepfather, a sort of half a stepfather, in fact. And that will be 6 and 8 pence, please. And the doctor-in-law held out his hand with a smile.
What for? Exclaimed Girly. Professional advice, said the doctor-in-law blandly.
What advice? Asked Girly. I don't know what you mean.
Didn't I advise you never to say I don't know? Explained the doctor-in-law.
But I didn't ask you to give me any advice at all, cried Girly in dismay.
Oh, if I waited till people asked me for advice, I should never get any clients, said the doctor-in-law.
And you might as well give me the other guinea at the same time, he continued. What other guinea? What do you mean? Asked Girly.
The guinea for professional attendance when you first arrived here, said the doctor-in-law.
I always charge a guinea for that. But I don't want you to attend to me, said Girly indignantly. I wish you hadn't.
If I waited till people wanted me to attend to them, I should get no patients, admitted the doctor-in-law.
So I always attend to people when I think they require it, whether they wish me to or not.
I must really insist on the fee, please.
Let's see. That will be £3.07 altogether, won't it? He continued, making a calculation in his pocketbook.
Oh, certainly not, said Girly. How can you make that out?
Well, you see, if you add them together, they come out to about that, said the doctor-in-law.
I'm sure they don't, cried Girly. It's very rude to contradict your elders, remarked the doctor-in-law severely. I'm surprised at you. Give me the money at once, please.
But I have no money with me, said Girly, rather frightened now.
Dear me, this is very serious. said the old gentleman, looking genuinely grieved. "Do you really mean to tell me," he continued, "that you were traveling about the country without any money at all in your pocket?" "Yes," said Girlie. "You see, I didn't know that I was coming here, or that I should require any." "Oh, that's an absurd excuse, my dear," said the doctor-in-law. "But what's that in your hand?" he continued, staring at her right hand. The girlie opened it and found a crumpled piece of paper in it. Though how it came there, she could never tell. While smoothing it out, she found it to be a kind of money order with the words, "Please to pay the bearer the sum of £5, signed the Wally Pug, written on it. "Oh, a Wally Pug order for £5. That will do very nicely," said the doctor-in-law, taking it from her and putting it into his pocket. "And now you will only owe me the odd sixpence," he said. "What odd sixpence?" asked Girlie. "I don't remember anything about a sixpence." "Well," said the doctor-in-law, "if you don't remember it, it's very odd. Therefore, it must be an odd sixpence. Don't you see, my dear?" And he held out his hand again. "But I've already given you £5 instead of £3.7, said Girlie, getting hopelessly muddled. "Well, my dear, don't let that worry you in the least," said the doctor-in-law kindly. "I'll overlook it this time, and if you can't find the sixpence, I don't mind taking your watch instead. I see that you have a very pretty one." "I think it's very unkind and greedy of you, then," said Girlie, turning very red and feeling greatly frightened, for her watch had been given to her by her aunt, and she was allowed to wear it only now and then as a great treat. "Not at all, my dear. You don't look at these things in the right light," said the doctor-in-law. "Don't you see that if you can't pay me the money, it is only fair that you should give me your watch?" "But it is worth a great deal more than sixpence," argued Girlie. "Not at all," said the doctor-in-law, flourishing his watch about at the end of the chain. "Mine only costs a penny." "Yes, but yours doesn't go," objected Girlie. "Mine does, you know."
"Does what?"
asked the doctor-in-law. Go, said Girlie. "Oh, well, then I don't want it," said the doctor-in-law hurriedly. "I don't want a watch that will go. I want one that will stay. If my watch was to go, I should always have to be going after it. And talking about going, now I must be off, for I shall be late for the Wally Pug. You can pay me the half crown when we meet again." And with a nod and a smile, the little old gentleman pocketed his watch and hurried off.
"Oh, if you please," cried Girlie, running after him. "Could you direct me to—"
"I can't stop," interrupted the doctor-in-law. "My time is far too valuable, and besides, you have no money." And walking rapidly away, he got over a stile and disappeared into a field beyond. "Oh, dear me, whatever shall I do now?" thought poor Girlie, looking about her in dismay. There was nobody in sight. So, well, she decided to sit down on the bank and wait until someone came past who would direct her to somewhere or another. "If I haven't the remotest idea where I am," she thought, "I don't even know how many miles I am from home. I wonder," she went on, "how many miles one can travel through the air while you count 85. I suppose it depends on how quickly you're traveling. Perhaps I can make a sum of it and do it by rule of three. Let's see. If it takes one girl 1 minute to count 60, how many miles can a girl and a doll travel through the air while you count 85? I suppose you have to multiply the minutes by the miles and divide by the number of people," she thought. Was so very busy trying to do this sum in her head, as she described it, she did not notice a young man walking down the lane till he had nearly reached her. Oh, Girlie could scarcely keep from laughing when she first saw him, for he looked such a very comical person.
He had long hair and wore glasses and carried his hands dangling in front of him. For all the world, like a kangaroo, thought Girlie. And he came and sat down quite close to her. And after staring at her for some time, smiled in a patronizing kind of way.
"Don't you think me very handsome?" he said at last.
"Well, I'm afraid not," stammered Girlie, who did not like to hurt his feelings by telling him what she really did think about him.
"Well, dear me, then your eyes must be seen too, decidedly," said the young man. "Why, you must be nearly blind not to see that I am very, very beautiful. And I'm a very important person, too," he continued impressively.
"Are you really?" asked Girlie, who could scarcely keep serious.
"Yes, I am a very superior individual indeed. I am the king's minstrel, enormously rich, and I'm going to marry the Wally Pug's niece. I compose better than anyone else in the world."
"Really?" said Girlie. "What do you compose?"
"A draughts," said the king's minstrel. "Of course you have heard of composing draughts."
"Yes," said Girlie. "They're things to send you to sleep, aren't they?"
"Sometimes," said the king's minstrel. "Mine keep you awake, though, and that's why they're so much better than anybody else's."
"Isn't it very difficult to compose?" asked Girlie.
"Yes, it requires a great brain like mine to do it properly," replied the king's minstrel conceitedly. "Would you like to hear my latest composition?" he asked.
"Yes, please," said Girlie, folding her hands in her lap and preparing to listen. Well, the king's minstrel took a roll of music from under his arm and, after coughing importantly, began to sing in a very harsh and discordant voice.
"Won't you walk into my parlor?" said the spider to the fly. "How I wonder what you are, up above the world so high." "I'm going to milk in, sir," she said. And when she got there, the poor dog was dead. 4 and 20 blackbirds baked in a pie. Gin a body, kiss a body, need a body, cry. Humpty Dumpty sat on a wall. And if I don't hurt her, she'll do me no harm.
"There, isn't it lovely?" he asked when he had finished.
"Why, it's perfect nonsense," cried Curly. "It's just a lot of separate lines from nursery rhymes all strung together. And besides, there's no sense in it," she added. "And that shows you don't know anything at all about it," said the king's minstrel contemptuously. "Any respectable person knows that there never should be any sense in really good poetry. The less you're able to understand it, the better it is. And it wouldn't be a composition," he went on, "if it wasn't composed of several bits of other poems. The great thing is to get it to rhyme. You see, this all rhymes beautifully." "I'm sure the last two lines don't," said Girlie decidedly.
"Oh," said the king's minstrel, looking rather confused.
"You see, you have to pronounce harm as near like wall as you can. You often have to do that in poetry, you know. Besides, people always pardon little slips of that kind in really clever people like myself. Goodbye. You may have the honor of meeting me again later," he continued, preparing to go.
"Oh, I was going to ask you," cried Girlie hurriedly, "whether you could kindly direct me to Y, or tell me the way to get home again."
"I beg your pardon, but I make it a point never to do anything useful. I am purely ornamental," said the king's minstrel, bowing politely and then strutting away with a conceited air, leaving Girlie once more alone in the lane.